views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are going to be talking about the market today. The market is not doing well all over the world. We've lost one-fifth of the world wealth since last June, and that equates to about $16 trillion. And, you know, the Royal Bank of Scotland went as far as telling clients that 2016 will be a cataclysmic year. Oil could reach $16 and stocks will be falling by at least 20% or more, and that people should sell everything except high-quality bonds. But others, such as MarketWatch, claim this market is giving you great opportunity, and they go as far as having cartoon after cartoon lampooning the panic that people have and trying to shame people out of selling their stocks. For example, they'll say that the smart people, you know, what is the stock market? The stock market is a place where people panic, sell their stocks, and the smart people make money. You know, I mean, things like that. And to make you feel like an idiot for selling. So basically, what's really going on in the market? Obviously, there's a lot of turmoil. Well, today I have Irving Goldman, who is the past CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, and he was also past head of corporate strategy for JP Morgan Chase. He has a lot of inside knowledge of the markets and what's going on. And when you talk to him, he blames it pretty much on geopolitics, just the uncertainties in the war and everything going on geopolitically, and then also on China. And he's going to dive into that and why China is such a question mark. And then we're going to get into other things like just the trust and how the world has just changed a lot. And, you know, the trust in governments, the trust in media, and just all the fraud that's been going on in Wall Street and how people just don't trust the system and how that's contributing. But then we also talk about the great things that are coming with technology and how much that can help our world, medical technology and just the computers, everything that's going on in technology and how our standard of living it will be immensely better with this technology as it moves forward. But there's a lot of change in the process and how people are coping with that and how that's affecting us. It's a very interesting interview. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you about financing opportunity that I have for you. If you are a startup company or you are a business looking for funding, I have a method for getting funding up to $250,000, 0% interest for 18 months. And you should look into that if you're looking for, it's the cheapest money out there. And if you have a short-term project, maybe a real estate project, maybe you're a startup that just needs to get a history of cash flow going, this is a great opportunity for you. You do not have to have collateral. The one requirement is that you do need to have a credit score of at least 650, which hopefully you have that, which is important as a business owner to really maintain your credit score. And the other thing is you need to have a Social Security number in the United States. So you need to be either a citizen or have the right to work in the United States because they need to be able to track that. But beyond that is the least expensive money out there for short-term financing without collateral. So if you're a business owner or you're looking at doing a, real estate project or whatever you're looking into, really look at that. You can find that on my website at sarahwestall.com. And now I am going to bring on Irvin Goldman to the program.
Hi, Irvin. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Sarah. Great to be back.
There is so much going on in the markets, and I really wanted to bring you on to give us some clarity as to what's going on. The markets are falling all over the world. Brazil, Canada, Greece, Venezuela, amongst others are in depression territory. Is the world currently in a recession, including the United States, do you think?
No, I don't think so.
What's really going on?
I think we're seeing a slightly greater slowdown in growth precipitated by China in the world. So the collapse of oil prices are obviously affecting a number of countries, Russia, as well as a bunch of other emerging market countries. And they're having problems. You see, Brazil is having its own problems. That country's has negative growth of almost 4%. But the big issue is really China. The estimate was that it was going to grow around 7 or 7.5% this year. And clearly it's not. It's very hard to know what the real official numbers are, but from all evidence of what's going on with commodity prices all over the globe and what's going on with countries who are very dependent upon exports to China, there's a downshift. And so, that's what's going on. And
because they claim they grew, right? They claim they grew at like 6 to 7%. So do you think that possibly they didn't?
They retracted? They're growing less strongly. So they're decelerating, right? So a few years ago, they were growing at 8%. And a few years before that, they were growing at 10%. So they're going through a structural adjustment. But, when you go from 8% growth to potentially 6% growth, you're cutting your growth by 25%. And being the second largest economy in the world, that affects all your trading partners, and it has contagion effects all over the world, including the United States.
But would that really slow us down, though? Because if they're still growing
it. Slow us down a little.
Because if they're growing by 6% instead of 10%, we would still have what we had last year plus an additional 6%.
No, they were growing more than 6% last year, right?
So yeah, like
they
were 10%. Or 7.5%. Right? So okay.
So if somebody's going to buy 10 of something last year and then they decide to buy 8 of it this year, if you're the guy selling it to them, you're selling them less. So you're growing less. You're still growing because you're still selling them 8, but you're not selling them 10.
Well, but wouldn't you – is it growth on the year before? So let's say if you sold them – if it grew by 8% last year and they sold you 10 and it grew 6% this year, wouldn't you sell 6 more?
No. It's 6 versus 10 in that case.
They've slowed down in what they're actually producing and buying.
Exactly. And in a dramatic way. And, they clearly have some of the largest demand for commodities in the world. And that's affecting commodity prices all over, which are hurting countries that are natural resource exporters.
Well, because they were buying a lot of copper and construction material, and they've really slowed down that, haven't they?
Yes.
And because they were doing infrastructure development huge. I mean, building up all those, they call them ghost cities, and they're not doing that anymore.
Right. They're going through some structural change. There's no question about it. No one really knows the degree of it. People look for signs of it in all things, whether it's oil, commodity prices, and any, signs of what's going on with their political system, what's going on with their stock market, because there's a general question about the credibility of the numbers and information as well as the transparency coming out. So it's very hard to gauge.
Well, the Baltic Dry Index lowest it's ever been recorded in history, which is the, you know, the trade between countries index. And I just looked at it now and it's at 358 and it's never been below 400 from what I understand. And it's lower than it's ever been during the 2008 economic crisis. Now, do you think that is pretty much related to China?
Well, part of it is definitely related to China, but there are other things at work in that particular index. So that index measures shipping traffic for goods and services, but mostly raw materials, right? But one of the interesting things about that is it measures shipping, and it's both supply and demand. So what happened is between 2010 and 2013, because China was growing so much, the amount of ships that could carry raw materials in the world doubled to try and meet the growing demand of China. So what happened is not only did China slow down, okay, but the number of ships that are out there now have increased over the last, you know, the last 5 years.
So it's kind of a healthy, I mean, it's a healthy adjustment in the sense that there needs to be less ships, and because they're all fighting for less, you know, less of a market. And so there just isn't enough for all those ships to be around.
Right. And right now, yeah, that's the way that business is. So yeah, the business
it's a correction in the market.
There's no question. The market is going through an adjustment right now. You know, the question really boils down to you, to what you originally asked, which is it going to cause a global depression, and are countries in depression generally, and how badly will it affect the United States? Listen, I think that, you know, we are slowing down. How much we slowing down is still in question. Like the IMF just cut last, I think a few days ago, yeah, 2 days ago, it just cut their forecast of growth, global growth, by a little bit, not tremendous, but enough because of what's going on. But they're not projecting massive contraction in the world. It's just a slowdown.
Well, the Royal Bank of Scotland just recently came forward and said that they're at a cataclysmic year. Oil could reach 16 and stocks will be falling by more than 20%. And they just said everybody should sell everything except high quality bonds. Now, are they getting scared and they issued, you know, I mean, is there just fear that's out there, or do you think
I think that's personally a little bit of an extreme position to take. I'm not saying people, you know, different people have different opinions. I mean, the stock market, the S&P is down, I don't know, somewhere where we're talking today, you know, 10-11%. And, for the year. And if you were to go down 20% from here, then you would be talking about an event that's only happened twice in the last 100 years. So, you know, that is a cataclysmic call on their part. I just think they're wrong.
they're more paranoid of what's going on. But do you think that the oil, because oil, I mean, we're kind of in a tough spot with oil, because the oil industry was our booming industry, and it was really creating a lot of jobs, and it was really helping the United States become strong. I know we have tech and we have other areas that are doing great, but oil really was a booming industry. And with that being in such a crunch, you know, with Iran coming on board and starting to sell oil, and with OPEC not lowering how much oil they're selling, do you foresee that being a continuing issue? And how do we get ourselves out of that?
Well, I do think it's a continuing issue. Listen, whether oil goes down another 20 or 30% from where it is now, I don't think is going to make or break the world. I mean, I think the question really boils down to whether it stabilizes. And my view is it'll get to a point here, where it will stabilize. At what level? You know, if it's $5, you know, lower, or $5, you know, or it stabilizes here, or it goes down to $15. You know, a lot of the the damage has already been done to the players in that market, that you know, so that another decline of the magnitude that they're talking about $16 or something like that. I mean, it will increase probably the default rate on some of these energy companies that are teetering, but a lot of that is already priced into the market. It's a question whether, you know, the market has overpriced, you know, too many defaults at this point. So I'm not, it's not clear to me, although it's driving sentiment now, it's not clear to me that that's oil itself is the major additional downside risk at this point.
Okay, well, do huge banks have a lot of exposure to oil? And that's what you're saying, they might have overcorrected for that, the market already?
Yeah, I think they do have exposure. But I think in most cases, you know, it's manageable. It's part of stress tests the banks do. They have individual sectors analysis and so on and so forth. Banks are pretty transparent about those type of things, the percentage holdings and stuff. So I'm definitely not worried about the U.S. banks. I think the U.S. banks are very financially strong, actually.
Well, what about
in terms of their balance sheet? You know, their business lines is related to oil. That's a different question. But,
oh, yeah. I see. Because they got lots of business lines. So their oil business line is probably doing awful, but it's balanced out with everything else they have going on, and they have enough reserves to deal with that risk.
Yeah, I think the banking system in the United States is stronger than it was.
And the derivatives in that industry you don't foresee that being an issue?
I don't. I don't think that's what the issue is right now.
Well, what do you think the issue is right now? Just China? China and...
I think just China is a major
oil?
Risk. No, I think China's a major risk. I think geopolitical uncertainty and tensions in the world are a major risk. I think the United States political situation is an interesting risk, because I think that despite all the noise, you know, you look at betting markets and, you know, probabilities and wages, everybody's just assuming Hillary's going to win, right? And I just, you know, it's going to be very interesting if something were to happen with her on the Democratic side. Because if something comes up, you know, okay, you could have Joe Biden enter the race or something like that. But then you end up with a very limited
Bernie Sanders versus Trump.
Well, I don't know who.
I mean, you know, I mean, that could be weird. But
listen, I don't think we as a country have a great, you know, an outstanding selection of candidates.
We have some extreme stuff going on.
Yeah. So the point just is that it's uncertainty. And, you know, until we clear out and get further along in the election cycle and the Republican side narrows down and there's some clarity on that. And, you know, and some of the stuff surrounding Hillary stabilizes, you know, once we get to that point, we'll see. But right now, I think it remains a significant risk. So, you know, so you have geopolitical risk, you have China, risk, you have U.S. political risk, and you always have these black swans, things that no one saw coming, and they inevitably show up here and there. And, you know, right now, the stock markets around the globe have just taken, you know, historic, negative turn for the worse at the beginning of a year. So, you know, sentiment is horrible. You've seen corrections off the highs of stocks that are, you know, strong stocks, but, you know, off the highs that we saw last year, you know, stocks like Citigroup are down 35% off their highs. You know, that's a big move in a stock portfolio. I mean, if you think about it,
oh, yeah.
Exxon, Exxon, which is, you know, a major energy company, and Chevron, you know, those stocks are down, you know, off their highs. Like, listen, there was some discounting of what was going on in oil, but they're down 25-30% themselves. But the fact that you have a stock like Citigroup and Goldman Sachs, you know, you see stocks off their highs down, you know, 25-35-40%. And then the general, stock markets and decline this rapidly. There's tremendous uncertainty and fear. And, you know, clearly, you know, we could be in a bear market. You know, that's, we still have to wait to see. You know, there needs to be, I felt there needs to be an adjustment in valuation in the market. And, you know, this might be very healthy in the long run.
Well, so, some of the stocks were overpriced, right? And other ones,
absolutely.
But other ones aren't, though. Other ones are pretty low
right.
for their PE.
General fear. There's just general fear, right? You know, there's a little bit of throwing the baby out with the bathwater in certain circumstances. And I think, you know, people that are excellent at evaluating companies' true value and getting away from the sentiment, you know, we're getting closer and closer to a number of high quality stocks, getting to prices where, for the, you know, the long term investor, they should be buying them. So, cool. And, you know, it's one of those things. You're always average in, right? People get scared when markets go down, but when markets go down, if you're really a long term investor, not a trader, you should be looking at the valuation of a company for the long term. And saying, okay, it's not overvalued. It might be undervalued. That's when you want to buy a stock. You want to buy them when they're undervalued or sell them when they're overvalued. So, you know, we were overvalued. You know, the CAP index, which is a, looks at the, price earnings ratio was last year at some of the highest ratio, you know, in danger zone or.
But it's just, it's so crazy because some companies get to these 80 PE ratios and other ones hover around 4. And no matter how good their balance sheets are, it just seems disconnected to reality a lot of times.
But that's the stock market.
Yeah, Sarah, that's just the way
that
it is.
It's not like it hasn't been like that forever. It is.
That's what makes it hard to predict. So if you're just looking at reality, you better like back up a few steps. Okay. Well, speaking of geopolitical, let's talk about some of these things. The BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa launched in July 2015, just, you know, recently, the new development bank as a competitor to the World Bank and the IMF. And their media announced the charter is to boost infrastructure funding in the emerging economies and offered them tailor-made services. Is this that? Do you believe that's their real agenda? What do you think?
Oh, yeah, no, I think that's conceptually their agenda. I think it's just a very political move, right?
They're competing with the World Bank and the IMF, and do you think that they're –
Well,
one of their,
let's talk about that.
Cause I think this is part of what's creating a lot of the uncertainty.
Well, listen, if you look at, the composition of the voting rights of the various countries that started, that are the five major members of this new development bank, all of which of these five countries, they have 20% voting. You see that under the United Nations, a la the IMF and the World Bank, you know, a country like China, which is the second largest, economy in the world, has, a 3.8% share, vote share, as compared to the United States that has almost a 17%. Right? Whereas in the new development bank, they have 20%, right? And the same thing with something, a country like Russia, who has even smaller amounts, they're less than 2%. So, you know, this is a political move to get away from a U.S., sort of Anglo-Saxon dominated, you know, American European, I shouldn't say Saxon, but American European dominated, institutions and making them more Asian centric. I mean, look,
the West versus the East, kind of.
Pretty much. Well,
with Brazil thrown in there.
Brazil's not the.
Yes, I know. Throw that in there. Yeah.
To me, it's politics. I think it's China, spreading its wings is what it is. It's more of the evolution of China, really.
And Russia too. I mean, do you think that's a threat to the United States and the dollar?
Oh, I think over the long run, you know, we discussed this previously. There will be a change in the mixture of reserves, but I think it's a 20-year thing, not a 1 year, 2 year, or 5 year. This is just the beginning of a change.
Okay. So it's not, you know, cause you hear so much, you know, on the internet, you're hearing so much about this. It's fear mongering, you know, about how China's wants to take down the dollar and they're dumping dollars and they're trying to be independent and Russia's, you know, and so you wonder what's really going on there geopolitically. Is that really, or is it just, it's a long-term natural evolution as they get more power.
And when, yeah,
it's pretty much,
it's part of the world balancing of power going on. You know, it's just what it is.
Well, let's talk about, I'm going to bring up InfoWars, which is kind of a alternative site, but they have over 20 million followers and Trump is on there a lot and it's getting a lot more. I'd like to look at some of their stuff because they have facts and information on there that I haven't seen elsewhere. However, I don't necessarily agree with how they're connecting the dots on many issues, but, they recently ran an article showing a declassified email that was sent on April 2nd, 2011 to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, revealing the invasion of Libya was launched to prevent Gaddafi from establishing a pan-African currency based on Libya's gold dinar. Is this typical foreign policy? I mean, would we start a war and attack other states for the purpose of maintaining control of the currency?
Listen, I'm not the expert on foreign policy, so, you know, I could speculate. I think our government does a lot of things for both our protection and political agenda. Do I think it is something that's out of the question? No. Do I think it's something we did? I have no idea. I think that particular topic is something that I really can't comment on because I'm not an expert on.
They consult? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No,
who would they consult to see whether this is what they would do? I mean, would they be talking to the big banks or is it really be Federal Reserve World Bank kind of territory? You know what I mean? When it comes to foreign policy in the economy.
Well, I think there's, you know, I think, the Treasury, always interacts and has many conversations with the Federal Reserve and the banking institutions around the country as well as the world. And they're, I think, very abreast of everything that's going on and how that translates into, from the monetary arm of the government to, meaning the U.S. Treasury and that communication to other branches of the United States and how strategy gets developed on that topic, you know, is not something, as I said, I have infinite knowledge, but the fact is, you know, that process happens for sure. How it relates to this, I don't know, but.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with all this, all the bad information out there and fear mongering and, you know, just extreme differences in the way people view what's going on in the economy, where do you suggest people should look to get good information? You know what I mean? It's hard.
Yeah. No, it's hard. It's hard. No, but first of all, the question is whether you're getting good information or you're getting good disinformation. So I think it's very, very difficult. I just tend to be very skeptical of the press and what comes out in terms of the information and the quality of it, as well as the truth behind it. So, you know, I read things, but I take everything with a grain of salt, because I think everybody that writes something is writing, for the majority, is writing it with a agenda. And whether it's backed by some organization that's helping the writer produce what they're doing, you know, I've seen too much to trust very much. So I'm the wrong person to ask where you should get information, because I think you have to be a little cynical about the information you receive.
Well, can I ask you, like, what do you suppose the agenda is of people? I mean, I understand the agenda when people are talking that everything's rosy for a company or whatever, because they're trying to, they might have exposure in it. They're trying to get people to, you know, prop up the stocks so that they're okay. I mean, you know, making the market seem better than it is always makes sense. That's the, you know, the government stance, the business stance, that makes sense of why they would be doing it. But what do you think the fear mongering is for?
Well, which specific, can you give which,
like,
fear?
Like, when they think that the dollar is going to collapse and that the,
no,
you know, that
I,
the country's.
I think that's actually people's opinions. If you're talking about people having various different calls about, you know, catastrophic things happening, you know, I think people believe that. I mean, people do their analysis and they believe that. There were, like, the limited few who believed the housing market was a serious concern in a bubble prior to 2008. And, you know, people could have, you know, they, you know, there were people that said this is, you know, cataclysmic, as somebody used the word earlier, right? But, and they ended up being right. So
yeah, well, they were laughed out of rooms. People just
right.
didn't think
so,
they were serious.
You know, the idea of Monday morning quarterbacking, I just think that there are a lot of risks in the system, and how people view those risks and how they will play out, will vary. I think the reality is that, you know, we did just go through the greatest economic crisis since the Great Depression. And without the Fed, I think it would have been greater than the Great Depression. And we're still living through this grand experiment.
Because we haven't solved these problems yet. We're still lingering.
Well, there are a lot of problems that haven't been solved. And this global monetary stimulus has caused a lot of unnatural dislocations throughout the economic system. And I do think it's reasonable for people to be fearful as the Federal Reserve starts the policy of unwinding it.
Well, people feel that we haven't solved the problems from 2008 and the Federal Reserve have used up their ammunition to deal with the problem. And at some point, you know, and you don't think that's the case?
No, I think that the Fed still has some tools in their toolbox.
Like, for example?
They could go back and do more quantitative easing. They could do that again. But I do think that it's less. And it's not clear, you know, how effective this massive amount of stimulus has been. The only thing we know for sure in the United States, and mind you, the United States has, you know, one system and one economy, right? There are a lot of, like, Europe has multiple economies, various different compositions, but they have one, you know, the European Union has one central bank. There's still a question whether that model actually even works, right? So there are still those people, you know, I think it was even George Soros that said last week, you know, he still thinks it could be a big problem, right? So it's not like there aren't, you know, very sizable distortions that have come from 2008 that have not been resolved, and they've been masked over by this just grand monetary experiment the global central banks are still in. And I think there are a lot of people out there that think the outcome ultimately of this will be, you know, very unhealthy, and that the result will be, you know, a dramatic change in the economy, and with some significant ramification. And there will be those that think it's cataclysmic things will happen, as we see.
Well, but if cataclysmic things happen, you know, the dollar resets, it doesn't necessarily, it might be bad for a little bit, but the dollar could reset and we still have the assets and we still have everything. A company will still be valued at what it still have the value of itself, right? I mean, it will be painful as we retrench, but
I'm less worried about the United States. I'm less concerned about the United States in terms of the spectrum of risks. I mean, the United States could slip, go back into a recession. I mean, a few months ago when we were talking, you know, you asked me what percentage chance we have, are we going into recession? And I said, I thought there for 2016, there was a 20% chance. There's probably, if you ask me now, probably a 25% chance as opposed to 20 in my view, right? But it's not, you know, now when you get to economies outside of the United States, I think those risks have gone up much more precipitously. And there is the possibility that if China continues to decelerate, you could have some real instability in some of these emerging market economies, and, you know, it have a contagion effect that could produce some substantial effects throughout the world. And, you know, I think those are the things. Right. I think those are the things. Was it RBS that you mentioned made that call? I'm not sure.
Royal Bank of Scotland.
Well, yeah. And, you know, then they could be right. I don't think it's as dire as the pessimists, do. Having said that, with regard to the stock market, there wasn't a great expectation on anybody's part that this year there were going to be, on average, the view was not substantial returns this year. There were those people calling for up 10%, but no one was calling for, the general consensus was not for a particularly strong year. The fact that the stock market's going to experience a lot of volatility and may end up negative, but, you know, marginally negative, you know, that wouldn't be surprising either.
Well, we haven't had a negative for a long time. So every 7 years we have a recession. We're kind of due for something.
Yeah. We also have interest rates that have been
A little low.
Remarkably low, and they still are remarkably low, and so are those all over the world. So, and clearly, as we go through the year, as these different events affect things, it will also affect the pace at which the Federal Reserve adjusts monetary policy. I mean, there are a lot of people that thought they made a mistake in raising rates in the first place. I mean, Ray Dalio, who's one of who runs one of the biggest hedge funds in the world, Bridgewater, and is one of the smartest guys in the industry, you know, thinks the Fed's going to have to do QE again. So listen, there are opinions all over the place. I don't think that it's necessarily a great investment year. I know it's easy to say that when the stock market's down 10%. It's just, it was never going to be a great risk reward year. And the stock market could end up for the year, but the amount of volatility you're seeing for the return that it gets is not great. And a lot of times it's just prudent to keep money in cash, which a lot of places are recommending, because even though the market's down, you can make a return if it ends up flat and you're buying it now. But, you know, I don't think people should panic. I just think that, unlike the last year, where every time the stock market corrected, you saw these large bounces. I think this time, you know, the market will go down, it will go back up, you know, have these bear market rallies and stabilization periods, but I don't think it's going to be like last year where, you know, something's down 10% and rallies back 10%. I'd be very surprised by that.
I mean, we're actually correcting this time, is what you're saying. We're not.
It's interesting. What I'm saying is, I think we're correcting, and you're not going to see these immediate, you know, huge bounce backs. And every time the market goes down.
Well, then it's not really a correction, right? If it goes down and it goes right back up, it's like, well, the correction never really stuck.
Right. So clearly, statistically, the year, the final year of a presidential cycle is the worst performing year of all, you know, you go back through history, you know, the final year, which makes sense, right? Because there's the
uncertainty.
Completely. So,
and this year's even worse. I mean, uncertainty this year is, I mean, it's a very different time from a political standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think people are going to be much more conservative this year. And I'm just not expecting these huge bounces that we've historically got every time we corrected. Do I think that we'll be down 11%, 12%, or 20%? My gut is that we'll end up being down somewhere around, 3 to 5% for the year. But, you know, it doesn't mean we can't be down another 5 or 10% before we get back up. It'll be very interesting. It's just one of those years where the warnings about taking chips off the table and having a larger percentage in cash than normal, I think is prudent.
Because then you have a position to be able to buy when you want to, or at least you're protecting what you have.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think we are in one of those environments. And I think we will be. It doesn't mean there's not a lot of opportunity. But, you know, for the long term, it's just, you know, it should be for the long term.
And there's always opportunity, right? There's always companies that are growing and gangbusters or undervalued.
Yeah, listen, the technology sector, you know, it's a hard thing to value, but a lot of these technology companies are just, you know, they've established,
they're in their infancy.
And platforms, and they're going to keep growing. You know, a company like Google, you know, I think is just going to be one of, you know, the more significant companies, for decades. Right. It's not, you know, so.
But and there's a lot of other companies there's never a lot like that, but there's a handful of companies that are growing into that. There's the tech market's really a bright spot.
Oh, no. Technology is just.
It's infancy.
It's infancy. Yeah. No question about it. So there is lots of opportunity. And I actually think, you know, over the medium term, if you get out of the immediate, get from the immediate to the medium, you know, there is, you know, some really bright prospects globally for the productivity and the impact that technology is just going to have on society and growth. And, you know, we see it before our eyes. We see it faster than I could imagine. It's just happening so quickly, and it's just fabulous. Like, you know, I always joke with my kids that, you know, they always ask me what was my favorite thing that I would want. And I told them, it's always been a flying car. It's always been, since I've been little, I've been waiting. I thought in my lifetime we would have a flying car, you know. And
do you think we'll have one?
Oh, there are. They've actually, you know, they're starting to get approvals. There are models out there.
Isn't that great?
But if you think about, you know, I'm actually in California now. If you think about just the impact of that on traffic, you know, and transportation and mobility, it's just, you know, it's like drones. Look at how that's changing things. I mean,
there's
just
there's disruption everywhere. We don't even know how our.
And you have to be, you know, you think negatively about how disruptive that is to, you know, employment in a lot of industries and how it's destroying industries and the necessity to have structural training people.
It might not be negative. Like, disruption's a negative word, but it doesn't need to be a negative word. It can be disruptive to the status quo, but not to something better going forward.
Yeah. So I'm very, I have very optimistic medium term, outlook on the world economies, because I see things a little bit through the lens of what's going on through technology and how much better it's going to make the world and economies and people's standards of lives living. But the process to get there can, you know, have some significant implications.
See, I think I agree with you. I think that we have this really bright future, but there's so much change and there's so much chaos that people are afraid of change, and they're afraid of the path that we're taking to get there because they don't understand it. And
Well, you know, when it affects you in a negative way, a la somebody loses their job and in a business that they've been in an industry, and they're 40 or 50, well, you can be in your mid to late 30s, you know, you have to reinvent yourself. And a lot of times it's hard to reinvent yourself later, but the larger part of our population right now is basically, you know, 35 to 70. And that's the hard part. You know, that's where it's harder to change and harder to retool and relearn different things. But, that's just the way it is. But getting back to the economy, you know, the one thing that I will say related to the fears out there is I don't think anybody has any idea about what the ultimate outcome of this monetary stimulus experiment's going to be. And that is a bit scary, right?
It is.
And anytime something happens and there's disruption and things aren't going well, what everybody will do will start highlighting those issues, right? It's like very interesting. We had the summer down, you know, trade off in the stock market, that correction, and that was generated by China. And all of a sudden, China came in, stabilized their equity market. And all of a sudden, you know, everything stabilized. And starting in the end of September, you know, the market was up in almost 8.5% in October, right? Which is just incredible. And like, you know, no one was talking about it, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, you get into the first week in January and like people are talking about the same issue that they were talking about in August. And that's just the way the market goes. It goes in these cycles of extremes and what it focuses on. And there will be, you know, this ebb and flow throughout the year.
Well, and I think people are more educated that the media isn't as believable as we all thought it was 10 years ago. You know, I mean, there's always people that knew the media was slanted, but I think the general population are waking up to the fact that the media is not really reliable. And I think we went through that crisis and, right? And then we went through that crisis in 2008 where there was a lot of systematic fraud and people didn't realize the amount of fraud that exists in our system. You know, during the SNL crisis, there were a lot of prosecutions and people were put into prison. But during this one, nobody, there really wasn't any consequences. So we're sitting with the system that is a big question. And we know there's a lot of fraud and we know the media is not, and politics is weird, right? I mean, we got this weird political and then geopolitical is weird. And then we got all this technology and internet and things that are changing our lives. I mean, there's just a lot going on for people to absorb and try to understand. And I can see where that fear is coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the how extreme that fear will get. And that's really the point of the discussion and what impact that's going to have on the economy and, markets around the world. And, you know, right now sentiment is extraordinarily negative. It's not to say that it can't go a bit further. I personally would be surprised, at least in the short run, the next few months, whether, we will see the kind of, bearish forecasts that are out there by a lot of people, if we get that extreme. Cool. I'm not saying we can't go lower in markets and so on and so forth, but I just don't think this is a, you know, 1930s/2008 type of year. I just don't think so.
But I think mentally people might think it is because of the fear, you know, all the storm, the perfect storm that I'm talking about. And do you think that emotional perfect storm could take it down on its own? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, listen,
people can do some weird things.
Stock market's an emotional animal, right?
Yes.
Right? I mean, humans are emotional, right? So, yeah, I'm not saying it's not out of the question. I just don't, for me, see it as a base forecast. You know, I don't see, you know, a down 30% year in the stock market as what I think. You know, I think we will be somewhere between down 5 and 15, and we're right in the middle. I'll be actually surprised if we end up for the year this year.
But you know what I think it
is? But anything is possible.
But I also think that when you look at my background or your background and you look at the fact that I've always been in technology, that's been my whole thing, right? And so I have foreseen a lot of these changes 25 years ago, and I don't know why it's taking so long. And now I'm like, wow, it's happening, and I didn't realize how much the world's going to be affected by this. You know, I just didn't understand when I was young how much of a social ramifications this really is and how much it needs to be absorbed by the people and how they would, you know, interpret it and accept it. And so I'm not as fearful of just all the changes going on in general because I've seen a lot, you know, I've been hearing it. I'm excited about it. And so it to me, it's just interesting watching. And obviously there's a lot of things going on. I didn't think about, but so much in medical and technology and it's just so amazing. To me, I'm excited about it. That's my whole radio show and everything I'm doing is, and I teach entrepreneurship at the, you know, the business school and I'm excited about this stuff. But I'm also can see just how much it's impacting people and how we have to be careful. You know, it's change management at a macro level.
That's exactly what it is.
Right?
That's a great description. Yep.
So, but anyways, I appreciate you coming on so much. I love it when you come on because I get to talk about these big issues with somebody who has a good frame of reference.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I always enjoy speaking with you. So okay. Thanks for the time. And till next time.
Yeah, next time. Thank you, Irvin. Have a great day.
You too.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Unfortunately, we do not have the time to finish this interview on air. So if you want to listen to the full interview, go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and you can download the podcast there. It's also going to be available on iTunes and 90 plus other channels, YouTube. It's all over the place. So look for that. Whatever your favorite podcast player is, you should be able to find the Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall, and you can get all my past episodes there as well. Some of them only do my past 10. So if you want to find ones that are older than 10, you can have to go to my website. But to get the rest of this interview, you can go all over the place. But sarahwestall.com for it for sure, in case you can't find it. And I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.